Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to this week's episode of Screen Talk. I am Ryan Latanzio, and this week, stepping in for Anne and pivoting us into the direction of television for a change for the episode, though, of course, Anne and I do talk about TV, but most regularly we're consumed by film, we have IndieWire's awards editor Marcus Jones here to talk to us about the Emmys race as the Emmys race starts to begin. So hello, Marcus. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Yeah, no, I've been telling Anne that I feel like she and you are caught up on more shows than I am. I've been impressed.
Well, now you're going to have to catch up on all of them, or at least you'll have to sample. This is what Anne and I tend to do, is we sample things. It is rare, unfortunately, and I'm sure you can relate to this, it's rare that we even finish a show, even if I liked the promising start that it offered.
No, I totally get it. I feel like I've seen so many first, second, and at best third episodes of shows that have been trying to get on Emmy voters' radars. So I feel pretty ready. Like, we can get into it.
So where are we in terms of the race? What's sort of the timeline? We're about to begin phase one, right? This is what it's called. And this is where the campaigning begins for the nominations.
Right. So I think the wild thing is, we're already very much in it. It's always like funny and a bit awkward when people are like, oh, like the Oscars are over and now's the time for you to relax. And I'm like, oh, there were already four-year consideration events for Emmys last week. Like, they really start doing them in March. I believe the first one was Only Murders in the Building season 3, because they had Meryl and Selena Gomez and Steve Martin and Martin Short in town. And so you got to take advantage of that, even though they're already shooting season 4. So nomination voting isn't until mid-June. But since March and now almost nightly, there are all these sort of TV Academy approved events where a show brings on a panel, shows an episode, and is trying to convince voters why they deserve to be nominated in specific categories. And so I mentioned the Only Murders one. They also had, of course, the creator, John Hoffman, but Pasek and Paul, the Oscar winning songwriters, were there. Because they did a song for Only Murders in the Building this season, and there's an Emmy category for that. So you'll see all sorts of people that are repping the show.
Well, you're about to enter a period where you're going to be at events every night in LA and sustaining oneself on Canapé and past apps, as one does in this period of time. And you talk about the period between the Oscars and the Emmys. It kind of was non-existent this year because the 2023 Emmys happened in January because of the strikes. And what I'm seeing here is that we are talking about some of the same shows still that we also were talking about in 2022. When we look at the comedy race, we're talking about things like The Bear, Abbott Elementary, the same two shows that sort of get bandied around in these categories across all voting bodies. But then also here, we have the return of Hacks, which is coming, very beloved. And I cannot remember off the top of my head what awards it's won so far, but it is very revered by the TV Academy. That's returning to Max on May 2nd. Have you had a chance to watch any of the screeners for that? I've seen a couple of episodes.
No, I haven't seen it yet, but everyone's telling me it's incredible. And I think that they're really excited to show it. They had started, on it all the way back in 2022, like you said. And then of course, Jean Smart had a health scare. One of the categories they've won twice is, lead actress in a comedy series, for Jean Smart. And so it's been a long time coming, and I even got a chance to talk to some of the cast this week, and they were saying, like, within one scene that they can tell, like, oh, this moment was from 2022, but this moment we shot in January. And so it seems like everything still came together seamlessly, and I'm already hearing people are enjoying it. But yeah, that's a big comedy that's coming back. And then, of course, a big comedy that is sadly leaving. It was the final season this year, so says its creator, was Curb Your Enthusiasm. And so I'd say those are kind of the four main ones to keep an eye on. But of course, there's Only Murders in the Building as well, on Hulu, Palm Royale, which is on Apple TV Plus. FX has some comedies still in the game. Reservation Dogs has been beloved by critics, but never nominated. And then What We Do in the Shadows has made it into the category once or twice. And so those are kind of the comedies to look out for. But I mean, it's all over the map, from network stuff like Ghosts on CBS to some of the newer streaming stuff like Gen V, which is the Boys spinoff that's on Amazon, that's more college focused. Oh, and Frasier's back. Frasier, which holds the record for most wins in outstanding comedy series. So yeah, I'd say that if you're looking for contentious races where, like, you don't have any clue who might win because everyone is doing so well, you're definitely going to get that in comedy with something like lead actress in a comedy series, where, again, Jean Smart is back. Quinta Brunson just became the second Black actress to ever win that Emmy in all of history.
This was in this past January.
Yeah. And then Ayo Edebiri is moving to lead actress in a comedy. She actually won supporting actress in a comedy in January. And by the way, that was the biggest sort of mind warp, is that because of the way the award shows kind of spread out, the Golden Globes and Critics' Choice Awards were right before the Emmys. And so Ayo and Jeremy Allen White, who leads The Bear, they both won awards for season two before they had ever won an Emmy for season one. And so, yeah, the schedule post strikes kind of has me all over the place. But
yeah, that's just that hurts my head a little bit. I don't quite follow. But as these things often do, well, you know, Ayo is somebody who's everywhere now. She was in a number of films last year, and she's like one of the leads of the new Inside Out movie. She's voicing Envy.
Yeah.
And she's someone who's just constantly announcing projects now. Like, she's a big deal. When we talk about Curb Your Enthusiasm, that really hasn't won any Emmys in a long time. Does that have a shot at winning anything? It would be a great kind of symbolic award. And it was a legitimately really good season. It ended on a great note, I thought. And without spoiling it too much, the very last episode sort of harks back to rewriting what the perceived wrongs of the Seinfeld finale were. And even Jerry Seinfeld features in the last episode. I had a great time with the season and would love to see it win something. But when we look at these categories, we're talking about the same people that win the same things every year. Why is it hard for even a beloved legacy favorite like Curb Your Enthusiasm to break back in?
Well, Curb Your Enthusiasm is kind of an outlier, because despite only two wins, it got a win for directing in one of the earlier seasons. And then later on, I think in sort of the mid stage when they're doing like the Seinfeld reunion and stuff, they got a picture editing Emmy. But I think that it's just sort of the way in which people are watching TV is changing. We're not all watching these shows at the same time anymore, unless it is something that's very traditional, like Abbott Elementary airing on ABC sort of every Wednesday, or right after the Oscars, which was a big thing this season. And so I think that it's been really great that they made a rule to say, both for drama series and for comedy series, that the nomination slots are always going to be eight, because that gives people an opportunity to really give a chance on shows that not everyone watches, but there are like influential people that may be the ones recommending it. And so, I mean, you see that in Oscars with Best Picture sometime. It's like, I don't know if when nominations happened, everyone had already seen Anatomy of a Fall or Past Lives. And so same goes for when something like What We Do in the Shadows gets nominated for comedy series. It's a indication like, oh, I've been hearing that's good, but I haven't like opened Hulu or went to FX and tried watching it yet. Like, let me give it a chance. And so you sometimes see some inspired choices. But I think specifically in the supporting actor and actress category, so much of the time we've seen like, oh, maybe they only watched one show, because there's been points where four Ted Lasso actors have made it in. There's been points where all of the White Lotus cast makes it into supporting actress, I guess in a limited series and then in a drama. It's good that sort of from top down they're suggesting like what to watch. But yeah, when you get towards supporting, it's a little myopic.
Well, you know, when you talk about something like The White Lotus, that was a water cooler show that premiered every week and everyone wants to talk about it the next day. And foraying into the drama series category, we don't have Succession anymore. And so that, you know, clears the table for anyone to come in. But I'm looking at these contenders and I'm not seeing a ton of shows that I feel like people are really watching and chattering about. I mean, The Crown was kind of excoriated this season for its treatment of the sort of the ghost, if you will, of Princess Diana that was did not go over well. I can't see them honoring that show again. Maybe. The Curse. I've watched that whole show and by the end I had very mixed feelings about it. It's a painful watch and the episodes are very long. I wonder if people really finished that one. That seems hard to imagine that getting in there, but then you have someone like, obviously Emma Stone just won a Best Actress Oscar. She's headed to Cannes with her next Yorgos movie. She's all these things happening. Like, it's definitely going to get notices because she is in it. But then like the only other show I'm seeing here that I know people do really watch, but they watch it for the camp factor, unless the quality, as I say, The Gilded Age. That's from my social circle of people who watch that show, including myself from time to time. I'm a little behind on that one. But what do you think are the titles that are in the lead for a drama series this year?
Yeah, I mean, if we're going by familiarity, The Crown has won before. The season it won happened to be the year where a lot of shows stepped out of the Emmy race because the pandemic had like delayed productions. And so that I think that's the same year where Emily in Paris makes it into comedy. I think The Boys maybe made it into drama. I would need to double check. But yeah, that was sort of like shows that people were watching, but were not necessarily pegged for Emmys, made the cut. So yeah, I think I say that more to say that nothing is written in outstanding drama series. It is kind of anyone's game. I think if we're looking at shows that seem like they've both found an audience and also got a significant critical acclaim that isn't kind of the like ironic watching of something like The Gilded Age or even The Morning Show, which is formidable, though it's never been nominated in this category, but it is an Emmy winning
show. Oh, never. I didn't realize.
Yeah, I didn't realize either. But I think specifically Amazon Prime Video has Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the Donald Glover, Maya Erskine series that I think people really enjoyed. And it was kind of a mission each episode.
I loved that show.
And then Fallout, which I think is a real pleasant surprise. I think even for you, like I'm not sure if I tell you video game adaptation, you're like jumping at the bits to watch it.
Well, actually, Marcus, I am a gamer, believe it or not.
Well, even then, like it's...
And I've played one of the Fallout games.
But I say that more is that it's Fallout is not like The Last of Us. No. I think The Last of Us is this very cinematic and it kind of makes sense why a lot of cinephiles or people got excited about that show. But Fallout, the perception of the video game kind of when you first look at it is this kind of kitschy, jokey, yet post-apocalyptic action game. And the show is a bit of that. It's though it part of the creative team is the producers, writers of Westworld, although they're not the showrunners. And it really does do a good balance of keeping things lighter, but it's still engaging and dramatic and really immersive in its world building. And so I was ready to write it off like The Last of Us, this is not. But I think the response you're seeing from a lot of people is, oh, this isn't what I expected. It's a lot better. And Ella Purnell is one of the stars of that, plus Walton Goggins, I think, from Yellow Jackets and Justified. Those two actors are really on voters' radars. The third lead is a newcomer, Aaron Moten.
Yeah, I mean, this show has a lot going for it. I haven't watched it. But what I will say is that you have Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan's brother, directing. Right, that's his brother, right?
Yeah,
directing.
So you wouldn't know he does not have a British accent.
Oh,
it
okay.
Threw me off so okay. much. I was like,
it's a transatlantic brotherhood. So he's directed the first three episodes at least, and it's been really well received. I was skeptical about this one. This is an interesting video game where it's more of a sandbox game where it's an open world where you can sort of choose your own adventure in some ways. Where Last of Us, which obviously Amazon Prime Video wants to capitalize on its success a bit, Last of Us as a game is more on the rails, where you are just sort of on the journey. You are locked into the path that you're on for the most part. And Amazon has really been pushing this Fallout series just in terms of their promotion and their press outreach, similar to the level that they did for the wildly expensive and maybe flopped Lord of the Rings series. I doubt that they put as much money into this one as they did the $250 million there. That didn't necessarily yield the viewership. I don't know about the numbers on Fallout. If it's been, I mean, do they share numbers, Amazon, so much? How transparent
not
are
in
they
any
with
way
that stuff?
That yeah not in any way that kind of feels what's that word that is easily understandable. Though I think the other thing that I kind of wanted to mention about an outstanding drama series, one, have you sampled Three Body Problem? That's I've been told it's best described as the haunted video game show.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. I don't think it's for me. And I realize that's not a really good constructive response to a piece of art. And I've been told to stay away from it, but the book is very, people have been also because people have pushed that book on me for years. I mean, people are really pushing something on me. I tend to push back and get resistant. And so maybe, but I don't know a lot of people that are really talking about this show, but obviously it seems to have done pretty well for Netflix in terms of.
Yeah. I think readers. They're moderately happy about it. I think in terms of any of the shows we're talking about, I don't think that Netflix had necessarily anything in comedy or drama that was like a massive hit, because their lead comedy right now is The Gentlemen. They also have Girls Five Eva, which I think people enjoyed, but I don't know if it's like, yeah, well, I do know that it's not on the level of a Stranger Things. But Three Body Problem, I should also mention, the Game of Thrones writers are behind it, and they have won Outstanding Drama Series plenty of times, so we shall see. But the other thing I wanted to mention in terms of sort of awards race type stuff is that a while ago, like probably last season or the season before, there's this conversation about Yellowstone is the biggest show on TV. It's gotten a little bit of guild love, like, of course it's going to make it into drama series. And again, this is around its fourth or fifth season. And it didn't. I don't know if it got any nominations. It certainly didn't get sort of the major categories. But I say that because one of the prevailing theories that's currently happening is that now that other shows are out of the race, this is finally slow horses time. I don't know if you've seen that show.
But think we have some fans of it on the staff, yes. Yeah, including our Anne, yes.
So it's in its third season, though I believe it might be its second season that's eligible. It feels like it's been on the air even longer. than Three Seasons, but yeah, it stars Gary Oldman, Jack Loudon. But my thing I always kind of figure looking at these is so far often shows that are just completely new have a better chance than this idea that, oh, this show or this actor has just missed the cut year after year. Like, oh, they're always going to be like the sixth nominee. Like, I'm a lot more skeptical of that. And so, all luck to Slow Horses. But in terms of prognostication, that's the one where I'm like, I don't know if these TV Academy members that already have so much to watch, we haven't even gotten into limited series, we'll have time to really binge Slow Horses before nominations voting.
Well, it's probably certainly the most prominent, other than the morning show, of the Apple TV Plus dramas, I would say. And something that saddles Apple TV Plus often is in their marketing and their promo strategy, where it's like, here's 10 episodes of a show starring Colin Farrell. There's this noir one, I don't even remember the name, and you don't even know it's coming at you. And by the time it arrives, it's like the window's already shut and there's no buzz. Because whatever their strategy is, they're not baking in excitement about these titles. And Slow Horses is one where I feel like it has more visibility than it certainly did when it started out. But then you look at something like The New Look, which is about Chanel. No,
Yeah, and I
Chanel,
believe
no.
Christian Dior then
Dior
meant.
and Chanel. Yeah, that's right. And that show sort of came in one huge cast, Ben Mendelsohn and Juliette Binoche, John Malkovich, Emily Mortimer. And that sort of came and went, and I feel like there was no chatter around that one. And I think a lot of that has to do with the way that Apple approaches these things. They're not penetrating the consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing I'll say about that is like, I know we mentioned Slow Horses Look. Watch out for Hijack, because I think that that's probably the closest they have to a hit drama outside of the morning show. It seemed like sort of in the winter, people kind of flocked to that Idris Elba-led show,
Yes.
Showtime giving you 24 vibes. But let's talk about limited series, limited or anthology series, I should say, though we're not working with too many anthologies.
Yeah, this is a category where I'm not caught up, but I'm fairly there. I feel like I can talk to you a little bit more about it than I can some of the other ones, but some of the ones that we're working with here, I spoke of at great length last week that I'm a huge fan of Ripley on Netflix, which I feel might be a challenge in this category, and we can talk about that. But then we have the wonderful season of Fargo, led by Juno Temple, the gay series with Matt Bomer and Jonathan Bailey, fellow travelers, which I also, of course, watched religiously. It's my duty. And True Detective, Night Country, which was huge for HBO, and then Shogun on FX that Anne is a huge fan of. I'm a bit behind, but there's lots of other ones here. So, what do you think's in the lead here?
So the most frustrating thing is that they did not extend this guaranteed eight nominations rule to limited series. Normally, when they're determining how many nominees they are, they try to keep it proportional. And so if this many shows or this many actors submit, there's a formula where if it hits a certain point, then they add another nomination slot. And proportionally, there really still are less limited and anthology series than there are comedies or dramas on television. That said, when you think about sort of the shows trying to gain the most attention nowadays, it tends to be these limited series that are literally starring people like Nicole Kidman or Jodie Foster or Annette Bening, all these people that were. Have an Oscar, or even were just in the Oscar race this year. And so I was talking to someone at Netflix. They have 11 limited series contenders alone, which are all fighting for five slots as a whole. And so, yeah, like you said, I think this is a great year for FX. They have Fargo, they have Feud, Capote versus the Swans. And Shogun. But again, that's three shows. If all three got nominated, that would take up the majority of the nomination slots that are available. And so I think these are the shows people are most excited about, but it's just like really tough. If there's one show that may come as a surprise that it's such a big contender, it would be Lessons in Chemistry, the Brie Larson series on Apple TV Plus that's based off a really popular book. I mean, Black Mirror is even in there. It's not able to do sort of the episode as a TV movie move anymore as far as award strategy goes. And so I think another talking point that's popped up as well is if any of these shows are going to be turned into dramas. I think it would be crazy if Masters of the Air were to do that, because spiritually, like, it's a sequel to the two war series that Tom Hanks and his producing partner had done before. And those were very much like definitive of what limited series or mini series at that time are. But something like Ripley, which you said you're a fan of, that show, I think, surprised me in how much of it was telling the same story as the Talented Mr. Ripley film kind of from a couple decades ago. When there's so much more to that character that you could still tell, like Patricia Highsmith was still writing books about that character well past the story that the show shows with, what is it, Dickie Greenleaf?
Yes.
And so that would be, and it was a Showtime show at first. And so I'm a bit surprised that, it seems like they're sticking to it being limited series. Maybe Andrew Scott is booked and busy, or Steve Zaillian is, of course, a big name. Yeah.
Well, the way that show ends, it does open the door ambiguously to, are we going to do another season of this? In which case, it won't be a limited series next time. But also, it's a series that deals in latency and perversion, and it is an art house literary project in every sense. There are great examples of showmanship in that series that I talked about last week that I won't rehash. You know, so there's certain episodes to look at where you see the level of craft is really extraordinary, but it's not a grab you by the throat. Well, I found it to be, but that's because I'm sick. But it's not a grab you by the throat kind of show in the way that True Detective Night Country became, even the start of Hulu's Under the Bridge is. Ripley is a slow drip into someone's tortured psyche.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to mention is sort of, it's very risky to have something premiere towards the end of the TV season. Ultimately, you see or have seen in the past couple seasons, the shows that make it in are something like The White Lotus or Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer miniseries. Those were like summer shows or fall shows that really went through the winter TV award season and gained traction, and voters were already familiar with it, having been in guilds and such, because Emmys are a peer voted award show like the Oscars are. But one would expect maybe like people would flock to The Sympathizer, because this is an HBO series that stars Robert Downey Jr., who just won an Oscar. And I think that's doing okay. But the surprise to me is this show that's taken the world by storm currently, Baby Reindeer, which,
oh God, I just watched it last weekend. No, we have to talk about that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's not even that great of a show, I don't think, but it is. I mean, did you watch it? Have you seen it all?
I've seen a little. I know the basic premise, and sort of a bit of what the, if you could say, twist is, but.
Yeah, well, I blew through that thing like during the course of a hangover in one day, basically. And there is a point in the middle where you do want to stop because it makes you feel sick and a bit dirty and lost, which it does very well at the show, which is about a comedian who is being stalked by She's not even really a super fan. She's really his only fan. She's not like I wouldn't, she's not that into what he'd his stand up. Like it's just she's the only person who's paying attention, but she also is pathologically very ill, mentally ill. And the show is about making her seem like just as much of a victim as he is because she's failed by the system and whatnot. But I actually don't think it really does that really well. I've been sort of fatigued by series that are sort of trying to contextualize abusers in this way. And I actually think the show doesn't really do that. It doesn't let you in. You don't ever see behind the doors of her private world. You only see it through the lens of this guy who is the creator, the star of the series, who based it on his real, his own circumstances, changing names and so forth, to the point where he says that his actual stalker in real life wouldn't recognize even what this person was. So, but it's interesting because that show came out of nowhere. I think a lot of outlets had to scramble to even get it reviewed. Like I saw reviews going up days after it came out. Where it's weird that it came from nowhere, and yet this now feels like a show that belongs here in this conversation.
And I will say, just sort of getting broader, I really do appreciate that the Emmys does make this capable, because of course there is this idea that if you get a huge star, people might flock to the show. But ultimately, if you're really looking at the limited series race, there are opportunities like that, or something like Shogun, where it seems like these shows that may even be in the lead in this limited series race, star people that audiences widely weren't super familiar with at first. And so we get to see even star-making roles on television, like Anna Sawai, who had been on Pachinko and Monarch, the Godzilla show, which actually is Emmys eligible this season, before taking on this role of Mariko. And now it's like, well, I think she might have a better chance than someone like Annette on Apples Never Fall, which is on Peacock, which has a more difficult time being nominated, or even Expats, which stars Nicole Kidman, but I think is more toward what you were saying about an art house kind of sensibility than.
Yeah, I mean, it is directed by Lulu Wang every episode, and so of course, and that's the director of The Farewell. So it is. I don't deign to use the word cinematic in terms of television because it's not putting them on. It's putting them on a different play. It's not. It's apples to oranges in a way, but it's also not. But yeah, I mean, that show is definitely. It's more of a challenge than some of these other more populist fare that I would. That's what I would. The term I would use among these contenders.
Yeah. And the last category I want to mention, just because it also factors into the acting races actually for limited series, is outstanding TV movie, which has become sort of a category that I'm obsessed with, because it got so weird when streaming came into the picture. Because I think we still have that conversation about something like, say, The Idea of You, which I don't think is getting a theatrical release.
It is not. It is playing only on Amazon Prime. So I guess it's technically eligible for this
So that's
award
the thing.
next year.
If it's only playing on Prime, is it eligible?
Yeah.
If it's only playing on Netflix, is this a TV movie to win Emmys? And when it gets down to it, it's kind of like, well, it is if it wants to be. And so, funny enough, you see kind of Netflix sometimes when it comes to campaigning for this come in late and be like, actually, like, we want Emmys for Due Revenge, something like Due Revenge, which I loved. I was like, this, I would have paid to see it in theaters. But towards the end of the season, they were like, oh, actually, this is now Emmys eligible. Let's go for it. This year, they're much more proactive. They have this film, Scoop, that stars Gillian Anderson, Rufus Sewell, Billy Piper. And it's all about sort of the disastrous Prince Andrew interview that he did a few years ago. And it's kind of fascinating to think of it as in conversation with The Crown. And so I think that's something that makes a lot of sense for them to enter into the Emmy race. But then you have something like Musica that Amazon Prime Video has, that stars Camila Mendes from Riverdale, are most familiar for that, and Rudy Mancuso, who used to be a Vine star, and they happen to be dating in real life, but it's this film that premiered at South by Southwest and was kind of a hit, and kind of deals with synesthesia and Brazilian American culture and things like that. And so there are these really, really interesting films that just so happen to have not gotten a theatrical release, but do like still kind of grab our attention as like IndieWire editors. Even something like No One Will Save You, the Brian Duffield movie that was completely silent, alien abduction, Caitlin Dever. Or even, I should say, the Kane Mutiny Court Martial.
I've seen that one too. Yeah, I saw that at the Venice Film Festival.
But William Friedkin's last film is currently in the Emmys race. And so I always have fun talking about the TV movie category, because it's all these films that I really do think people should consider watching. And it is kind of unexpected. But of course, in terms of like what's probably going to make it into the race, Monk is back with Mr. Monk's Last Case of Monk movie. Shout out to Tony Shalhoub.
Shout out to you for that title, enunciating it correctly. Well, I guess it sounds like I've got some homework to do. So on that
note, do I, by the way, I should say, like, do not feel bad if you're not totally caught up and all of this is new.
Because I don't feel
in
bad.
A sense, it's
got
new
enough to feel
me.
Bad about every day. Thank you for joining us this week, Marcus. And we'll have Anne back next week, but we'll look forward to having you again on soon during the Emmy season.
All right. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.